John Murphy, Steve Tasker on this Friday afternoon. Hour number two of the show. Steve, you ready to go?
I am.
Favorite part ready. Of the week coming up. One of my favorite parts is our chance to talk to Greg Cosell. He is the man behind the NFL shows on ESPN, and he joins us right now, Greg Cosell. Happy to have you with us, Greg. Good afternoon. How are you today?
You mentioned Niagara basketball, which brought me back to my youth there, Murph. And you may remember this as well, but I saw Manny Leakes and Calvin Murphy play at Niagara.
Oh, yeah. I love that team. My family had season tickets in the late 60s, early 70s for that Niagara team. They were a really good, solid team.
Was Jim Maloney the head coach?
Frank Layden was the head coach when
they went
to the NCAA tournament in 1970. Maloney was just before Frank Layden, I think.
That's right. Because I saw those guys play at St. John's University back, you know, when I had season tickets at St. John's, sitting three rows behind Louis.
Oh, wow. Pretty good seats.
Yeah.
And Karnisecker was the coach at St. John's then, right?
Yeah, and he left for a couple years to coach the New Jersey Nets came back.
Yeah. Well, they'd like to get that glory back at Niagara and at Canisius and St. Bonaventure and all of them, actually. Right now, the UB Bulls are nationally ranked. They're doing pretty good. We're not here to talk about hoops with you, Greg. I can talk about it all day.
I know, me too. But, hey, let's talk some football.
Let's talk some football. Let's talk some coaching moves. And what do you think about some of the coaching moves that have been made already and some of those that are rumored around the NFL so far?
You know, those are always tough. I mean, you know, people obviously look for certain things, and then there's always a philosophy or a belief that goes into some moves. Obviously, we've now got this sort of Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay train working here, and that the belief that those two offenses are really good, and you want to sort of replicate that if you can. And that's hard to know, you know, because very often it's not just the philosophy, but it's the person. Obviously, the Cliff Kingsbury hire in Arizona is very, very interesting because he's, you know, he's an air raid coach. I know a lot about the air raid from speaking to people. That's basically what I know from talking to people. I certainly have not been involved with it. And it's an interesting offense from an NFL perspective. I think that Kingsbury will have to make some adjustments in his worldview to coach in the NFL with that philosophy. And I'm really happy for Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio, to me, is just one of those NFL lifers, a really, really good coach. And no one knows how someone will do as a head coach, but I think he's very, very deserving of an opportunity.
Who do you think is going to have the most immediate success? Who's set up for that right away?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. One could argue that the Packers with Aaron Rodgers potentially are, because they're going to keep Mike Pettin, from what I understand. It'll be an interesting transition, I think, for Aaron Rodgers to some degree, because the one thing about Matt LaFleur is he really comes from more from the Kyle Shanahan school, which is a lot of quarterback under center, play action. That's kind of the defining feature, the run-pass fusion in the play-action pass game. And, look, Aaron Rodgers is talented enough to do anything, but I think that team could have success.
How much of his job, LaFleur's job, is managing Aaron Rodgers? How much of a factor will that be?
Well, I don't know Aaron Rodgers personally. So, there's been so much written and talked about, and I'm sure Steve's been around him. I have not. So, you know, it's always hard to talk about an individual, you know, that you don't know, and what the public perception is, which may or may not be true. From a physical standpoint, he clearly can do anything. The tape tells you that there are numerous times in which he steps outside the structure of the offense when he does not need to. Now, he can always make plays outside of structure. That's been his MO much of his last 4 or 5 years. But I think that offense is very structured, the Matt LaFleur offense, very structured and very disciplined, and I think that that's something that they might have to work through.
Huh. I wonder what you think of, we're going back to Sean McVay here too, just talking about coaches, and he's only had a couple of years in as the head coach there of the Rams. Does he have enough of a tenure to have proteges, to have a coaching tree of his own, do you think? It's kind of early for that, isn't it?
I would say so. I mean, I think everybody likes his offense.
Yeah.
And then you get down to philosophy versus success. You know, a lot of people have started to write these last couple of days, particularly with the sort of Sean McVay tree, that what if he loses on Saturday night? Does that mean that it's not very good? You know, again, those are questions that people have different responses to, but I think people are looking at his philosophical approach to offense and their belief that he's a great play caller. And again, that's something people can have a lot of different opinions about. I certainly like his offense. I think it's very timing-based. It's very rhythm-based. I like a number of the things he does, but I agree with you, Murph. I think it's too early to look at him as one might look at Bill Walsh.
I wonder what you think of this observation that I've often made on the show, Greg. And I know play calling is important, but on the list of qualifications for a head coach, I would put play calling maybe somewhere around the bottom of the top 10, or at least having a knack for play calling of responsibilities that a head coach has to have. What do you think?
Well, then you get into what, you know, what the head coach – look, we know, and Steve knows this, with Sean McVay, when the offense is on the field, he's calling the plays. When the defense is on the field, he's sitting on the bench with Jared Goff. So Basically there's an offensive head coach and a defensive head coach. You know, I don't know if that's what's going to be the case with Cliff Kingsbury, for instance. And, you know, I don't know what Matt LaFleur is going to do in that regard, because Mike Pettine has been in this league a long time and had a lot of success as a defensive coach. So, you know, I think people – I guess it depends on what one's philosophy is as an organization. Are you looking to, I'll give you the Cardinals are a perfect example, and I know they're not a team people a lot of people talk about. Last year they hired Steve Wilks, and they made it a very, I don't want to say a big deal, but it seemed that their approach was, let's hire the best leader of men without regard to quote-unquote X's and O's. Well, in their mind, that didn't work at all. So what did they do this year? They hired someone who they believe has great X's and O's as an offensive guy and can create, you know, a super dynamic NFL offense without really – I don't want to say they didn't focus on whether he's a leader of men, but that seemed to be secondary to the fact that he might have this aerodynamic offense. Yeah. So I guess it depends on an organization's philosophy.
Yeah, and I just one more question on this, Greg, because I'm kind of fascinated by the decision-making process when it comes to hiring head coaches. The Jets go out and get Adam Gase, who to me is really nothing more or not much more than a play caller. And I just think, boy, there's a lot more to the job than coming up with offensive plays, and yet there he is now with his second head coaching job in the last couple of years.
Well, and we all read that Peyton Manning made a phone call, you know, to really endorse him. And maybe that put it over the edge. But, you know, I think, again, now it's philosophy. My guess is, guys, that the Jets believe they have a young quarterback that's on the verge of potential superstardom, and that Adam Gase is the coach to bring that out. And not that they don't care about the other parts of the team, but the point is, if he can do that and they can have a star quarterback, that in some ways the rest of the team kind of falls into place.
You know, one of the things I've noticed about this list of guys, and if you take for granted, which is a big taking for granted, that Zach Taylor does get the Cincinnati job, and then in Miami this Chris Richard gets the job. There's only two guys on the list of eight head coaches that are what you would call recycled. That's Adam Gase, the guy you just spoke about,
right,
and Bruce Arians, who jumps back in after a year out. So most of the teams that are looking for head coaches go to somebody who hasn't done it before. What's that tell us? Is it a trend? I think that's just a, to me, that would be a trend.
Well, I think the belief there is that it's about philosophy and system more than being a leader of men or you know, an overall sort of leadership deal. I think that they're now looking for this idea that you're going to get great offensive philosophy, and it's going to be it's cutting edge, so to speak. You know, I'm sure Arizona believes that Kingsbury, there's a cutting edge element to him with his offensive philosophy and principles. So I would tend to think that that's where teams are going more than looking for the so-called experience or leader of men.
We're online with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer at NFL Films for more than 30 years. Well, let's dive into some of these playoff games. Some people think it's the best weekend on the pro football calendar, the divisional round, Greg. And it starts tomorrow, 4:35, with the Colts in Kansas City. My partner here, Steve, thinks that could be the upset of the weekend. How much of a chance do you give the Colts against the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, I like the Colts, and I think the biggest issue for the Colts is going to be dealing with Patrick Mahomes and his improvisational ability, because they're a predominant zone team, and when you play zone, no zone is meant to really be effective for more than, let's say, 2.5 seconds at most. So when the quarterback starts to move and you're taught to plaster onto receivers and match up, you know, that sounds good, but it's hard. And so I think that that's going to be one particular difficulty that they might face in this game.
Yeah, and that comes down to really my philosophy or my thought about this game. If you're going to give the Colts a chance, it's going to be Andrew Luck and the offense really taking advantage of a poor Kansas City defense and staying on the field and minimizing the opportunities that Mahomes has on their offense. I think if you're the Colts, you have to have enough confidence that you can stay on the field offensively and maybe hand the football off on a third and medium rather than throw it and just grind out first downs.
I couldn't agree more. I think you have to take an approach in this game. Look, will they take some shots on first down with shot plays, which they've been outstanding at this year? They will. But I agree with you, Steve, with that approach. I think you have to go into this game believing that we're going to just sort of that the playbook is open, and you know, unless it's third and 10, let's say, but that the playbook is open, that second and 8 is not necessarily a throwing down, that we're going to just keep running the football and playing sustaining offense. And I think that's a philosophy, and you have to build that throughout the week.
And I think it's almost to the point where you run your 4-minute offense for four quarters.
Yes, that's a great way to say it. I would agree with that. I remember in the Super Bowl when the Eagles got the ball versus the Patriots, clearly Doug Peterson said, there's no such thing as fourth down in a traditional way. We're just running our offense. We're not just going to throw it on every snap. We're going to run our offense. And if we get to fourth down, it's just another down, and we play. And not that Colts are going to go for it on fourth down, but I think your four-minute analogy is a good one.
The Chiefs' defense, the numbers are pretty shocking when you sit down and look at them, Greg, but they seem to find a way around that. Can they continue to do that and advance in the playoffs, giving up 400 or more yards per game and giving up all the points they seem to give up?
Well, you know, they've outscored a lot of people this year, and I think they're a team built on offense, clearly. The one thing they do well defensively is rush the quarterback, but again, that comes into play, you know, on certain down and distance situations more than others. So, look, I'm sure they believe, looking at the Colts defense, which has actually played well, some will point out that they haven't played great opponents, but it's a very disciplined defense, very sound fundamentally. Like I said, they play predominant zone. They've added more blitz as the season's gone on, particularly with the slot corner Kenny Moore. But I wouldn't call them a high percentage blitz defense. So I think the Chiefs probably feel that they can outscore the Colts.
Yeah, they've got to feel that way. They've given up more first downs than any team. They're ranked 31st in the league in passing yards, 31st in rushing yards, 31st in total yards. I mean, they're giving up yards like Christmas presents to these guys. I mean, and that's really, it comes down to, I think, what the always unpredictable thing is, the bounce of the ball, maybe a turnover here late.
Right.
Because I don't think there's any question the Colts are going to be able to score on this defense. If they could score on Baltimore, they can score on this defense.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I'm sort of my pulling for the Colts a little bit here. They're tugging at my heartstrings a little, so we'll see how it goes.
We're with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst, NFL matchup on ESPN, going through this weekend's playoff games, the divisional round, and the other AFC game Sunday at 1 o'clock. The Chargers have to come back east again, Greg, to play the Patriots this time in Foxborough. How tough a task is that? Some of us, me included, think this could be an upset brewing. The Chargers might have something to shock the Patriots on Sunday. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think the Patriots' offense is a lot different than we've come to expect. I mean, they have not been very good on third down this year, which is very rare. Tom Brady's third down numbers are poor compared to previous years, and they're actually in the bottom half of the league. You know, the Patriots have become kind of a running team in which they line up with a fullback, Devlin, so they play a lot with what we call 21 personnel, two backs. They're going to end up playing a lot when they go to 11 personnel with three wide. What the Chargers do is they play with six defensive backs. That's kind of their MO. The Chargers have played with six defensive backs on well over 50% of their snaps this year. So that's how they play. That's how they roll. So that part of the matchup fascinates me. One area I think of concern for the Chargers, and I don't know if the Patriots can exploit it, but I think the Chargers' O-line is probably average at best by NFL standards, and they've struggled at times in pass protection.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's always a question mark is what the Patriots see in Philip Rivers and the Chargers' offense. And you're right, if they feel like they've got an advantage in some matchup, that's all the Chargers are going to see. If they think they can get to Philip Rivers, that's all you'll see all day until the Chargers can prove that they get out of it. And so do you think that's where the crux of Chargers' offensive success will lie, in their ability to protect Rivers?
Yes, because Rivers is so good at being able at times to camouflage and compensate for the weakness at times, but there are certain times he can't do it because obviously he's not going to move anywhere. So, you know, his sense of timing and rhythm is so good and his ability to get rid of the ball, and against many teams, he can handle that. But, you know, when you start playing a team, let's say, like the Ravens, they cause problems. There are multiple front defense. There are pressure defense. They come from different parts of their alignments. You know, the Patriots are not necessarily like that, but you never know because Belichick coaches to the opponent.
Right.
Tomorrow night's game, NFC, Cowboys and Rams out west, 8:15 kickoff tomorrow night. Greg, what kind of a chance would you give the Cowboys in this game against a team that won 13 games this year?
You know, I give the Cowboys a pretty good chance. I think the Cowboys stylistically are very defined. They have a distinct profile. What they do is their run game and their defense are both among the best in the NFL. So what that does is it essentially keeps games close through the fourth quarter. They really don't ask Dak Prescott to do very much in the passing game. It's a very limited passing game. But that profile makes games winnable in the fourth quarter. And that's when Prescott's running by design and his improvisational ability really come into play. And it only takes one or two plays at that point, and they can win games. So I think they can keep this game close, and I think they would then have a chance to win.
And it does get out. It gets untenable when the Rams do bust loose, snap off a few big plays, and put them down by double digits. Then, you know, how susceptible are the Cowboys to then falling into that black hole of trying to catch up and then turning it over, and it gets out of hand.
That's the concern. And again, at some point in time, that the Cowboys, and every team, Steve, you know this, every team that plays that sort of what would be considered old school run game defense gets into a game where they have to throw. And look, maybe if that turns out to be this game, maybe Dak Prescott will play really, really well and they'll come back. But they're not built that way, so we'll see. But every team that's built on run game and defense eventually gets into games for whatever reason, where your quarterback has to make throws.
And finally, Greg, the late game Sunday, 4:40 p.m., the Eagles at the Saints. This one of all the four seems to be the one that might be the most lopsided. Do you see it that way, this matchup?
Well, I mean, it could be. It obviously was Week 11, but I think the Eagles are a different team. You know, the big concern for the Eagles would be their secondary and their corners in this game, and I think the return of Ted Ginn, who missed most of the season and certainly did not play in the Week 11 game when the Saints won big anyway, but I think he's a big factor in this game because of his vertical dimension. The Eagles in that first matchup very often doubled Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, and obviously it didn't necessarily help them, but they took that approach. I think Ginn makes it difficult to do that. So we'll see. I mean, you know, the Eagles, look, a lot of people like to talk about the magic of Nick Foles. I don't know what that means. You know, he's won some games. Obviously was great last year in the Super Bowl and before. But, you know, the Eagles are not really an explosive offense.
Right.
Right, and I agree with you. I think in the two NFC games this weekend, I think both visiting teams are the best-case scenario is a close game late. Because both the home teams could get away and jump out quick, and then the lid comes off.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think both these games have to be close mid-third quarter on, and then the away team would have a legitimate chance.
Right.
But if they're down by, you know, two scores, whatever, something like that, going to the fourth, I think it's difficult.
Right. Hey, Greg, thanks for this. Have a great weekend watching these games. You've got the shows on ESPN tomorrow. We'll all be watching that, too, for more in-depth looks at these four games. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.